Om Shri Sai Ram, offering my loving pranams at the lotus feet of our most beloved Bhagwan, I deem it a great good fortune to introduce this unique, loving, traditional offering to Bhagwan on this auspicious day. Swami, we want to offer a loving bouquet at your lotus feet today. There are so many flowers you already have here. But please accept our bouquet. Our bouquet has got a lot of flowers. Some very beautiful bright yellow flowers. Some deep red roses. Lovely tulips, chrysanthemums, and broad leaves. Swami, please accept our gratitude. Bhagwan is truly Nada Brahmam. He is Gana Lola. And he is Nada Swarupa. Have we not seen it in the decades that he spent listening to our bhajans? And he still does. Morning and evening he listens to our bhajans. And how much he has encouraged us. Many of the students sitting here who are singers or instrumentalists would know that Swami always extended great enthusiasm and encouragement to all of us. If there was a spark of talent or even interest, Swami would ignite it. Then to talk of the padyams that Swami would sing before his discourse. So amazing, so musical, summarizing the entire discourse in 4 or 5 lines. And the bhajans that he would sing after the discourse. Swami, even today we can hear Chitta Chora Yashoda Kebal, and how beautifully our hearts would just merge into one song. And Swami heard a lot of orchestras. Swami heard world music. He was, in short, a great lover of music. Is, in short, a great lover of music. But he always had a special corner for traditional classical music. Be it Hindustani style music or the great Carnatic style traditional music. Because Swami would often say, he told some of his students, some of his singers, he says, when you sing in Shruti, when you sing in a high Shruti, the vibration will purify you. And the moment you are purified, when you sing with a purified heart, that will reach out to all the devotees, that will reach out to the whole world. And this great traditional Carnatic style of singing, where everybody sings a kirtan, an offering to Bhagwan, is so wonderful. He is indeed the source of all music. You know, in Radio Sai, we have a very precious recording of Bhagwan actually singing one of the Pancharatna Kritis of Tyagaraja. It's called Sadinchane O Manasa. So beautifully Swami has sung. This was sung way back in the 50s in Venkatagiri. And Swami is singing it at great speed. And the beauty is, yes, it is fast, but every word is so clear. And so beautifully sung. Is he not the source of the music? He is the one who inspired Tyagaraja to write this Kriti. And he himself has blessed the Kriti, singing the same Kriti again. Many years back, I had a small conversation with Sri Raja Reddy Garu, who was living with Bhagwan for a long time. And he told me a beautiful incident of, as Swami was going to the Badrinath temple, on the way, Swami just took a detour and went to the Vashishta Gufa Ashram of where Swami Purushottamananda was living. And Swami Purushottamananda, seeing Swami, was so ecstatic and lost in trance. And Swami was also so happy, and he asked him, ask, what do you want? At that time in Swami's entourage, we had the great Carnatic musicians, Sri Ram, Sri Lakshman, and Raja Reddy Garu, who himself was a great singer. And spontaneously, Purushottamananda Swami asked, Swami, I'm staying away from the world, but I like music so much. I want to listen to 2 particular kritis of Tyagaraja. And Swami was saying, yes, you ask, which one do you want to listen to? When he told the names of those 2 kritis, the great musical geniuses that were there in the entourage, none of them had heard those kritis, because Tyagaraja has composed thousands of kritis. And the moment he asked, Swami immediately burst forth and started singing those 2 kritis. And Swami Purushottamananda was so ecstatic, and he was lost in a trance. And the moment Swami completed the kriti, He embraced Swami and he said, "He has sent you, he has sent you." And with a twinkle in his eye and a mischievous smile, Swami looked at few of the people who were there and said, "Who has sent whom? He has himself come." Yes, that very source who has inspired Tyagaraja, that very source who is the heart of every kind of music today, has inspired us to compose and offer two kritis in the traditional Pancharatna style of Tyagaraja. The first song is composed in Gambhir Nate, Rag Gambhir Nate, and set to Adi Thalam. And it deals with the advent of the avatar. And it deals with the early Chitravati days where Swami showed wonderful darshans and had performed so many leelas. Then it deals with the Kalpavriksha where Swami would give whatever the devotees wanted from a simple tamarind tree. And he showed visions of Dashavatar. So this first traditional kriti deals with those themes. And the second kriti is composed in the rag Maya Mala Gola, set to Adi Talam, and it deals with Swami's life and teachings. Now, we all know that Swami has always told, "Why fear when I am here?" And Swami has always encouraged the Vedas. So these were the early stages when Swami started supporting and then encouraging the Vedic pundits and then giving them encouragement to come here and chant. And he always told, "When amongst men I am a man." And some of his beautiful teachings about love, about seva, these are contained in the kriti too. Swami, please accept this bouquet. In this bouquet, we have these yellow flowers of bright flourishes of music. We have this red roses of soulful lyrics. We have these tulips of depths of musical composition. We have these broad leaves of your message. We have these chrysanthemums of high and low pitch. And this is the range of composition. Now these two songs, the lyrics for these songs was written by Srimati Vasantalakshmi. She is an honorable professor, honorary professor in the music college. She is a devotee of Swami for many decades and a scholar in Telugu and music. The lyrics and the tuning was done by Sri Rajkumar Bharati sir. He is from the illustrious family of Sri Subramanya Bharatiyar, who is a patriot, mystic, freedom fighter, and a great devotee of the Lord. Sir is not just a great musician, he is a versatile composer as well. And for many of us who have heard the songs of Prema Pravaham, which were offered to Bhagavan on his 85th birthday, we should know that Sir is the one who has set them to tune, and Bhagavan was so pleased with that set of compositions. I would request Sir and Madam to offer their pranams to Bhagavan. It's interesting because yesterday over lunch, Sir was sitting and some of the other musicians who were there, they asked Sir, "How did you decide the ragas for these kritis?" And Sir said, "Who decided the ragas? I did not decide them." And they were surprised, and some of the senior musicians who had come, they said, "Sir, the second kriti is Sada Bhavayami. And how did you decide Maya Malava Gola for this kriti?" He said, "I didn't decide." He said, "When I started singing, it just came in that raga. And it is Swami who is inspiring me to do it." And when he went through the lyrics, it said Maya Manusha. So the Maya Malava Gola raga fit exactly for that kriti. Swami, you are the source. You are the one who has set this lyrics. You are the one who has composed the music. You are the one who is going to sing. You are the one who is going to listen and enjoy. You are everything. We, the staff and students of Swami's college and Swami's institutions, pray that Swami, you make us worthy instruments and accept our loving offering. Jai Saram.
pranamami saisha.
Sani, 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 S
Satya Sai Paripurna. బాలుటవు మహిళల మరణ్య మహిళవు మన సెడి మనోజతములీడేచు ప్రాణ విబుడవు నీవు ఏకాంతముల విశ్వ విబుడ వీరుకే మర్దను మంగేశం కరుణా హృదయం సరి పమగ మగరి సరి సరి ఈశ్వరాంబతనయా మీ కనుల నర జాతు
Om Shri Sai Ram. By Bhagwan's divine grace and sankalpa, we have with us today one of India's most respected individuals, Sri Swaminathan Gurumurti. He is one of India's very well-known professional chartered accountants and a respected and sought-after corporate advisor as a person of great integrity and competence. He is also highly regarded as an investigative journalist, a writer, and a social activist. He was rated as the 17th most powerful person in India today, in India, by India Today magazine. However, he never derived his extraordinary power from any formal position that he occupied in the government or in any organization. His influence rests on the status that he enjoys as a person and writer of high integrity and exceptional courage. On the contrary, far from using his powers for personal gain, he declined all positions that were offered to him by different organizations and governments. Hamish MacDonald also says in his book that Gurumurti had a strong sense of probity. Sri Gurumurti has preferred to do basic work like molding public opinion on issues of national importance and original studies on the community linkages on India's economic model. He has traveled across the country and with his team of professionals and academics in the Swadeshi Jagran Manch studied over 40 community-driven industrial clusters in the last 20 years. He regularly contributes columns and leading newspapers like the Hindu, the Business Line, the New Indian Express, and others on issues of critical importance to society and the country. Sri Gurumurti is also a guest faculty and distinguished professor at the School of Management in IIT Bombay and several other universities. He is also a keen student of philosophy and religion and has derived much inspiration and guidance from the Shankaracharya Mahapiriva, sage of Kanchipuram. We are grateful to Bhagwan that he has motivated Sri Gurumurti to be with us today. I now invite Sri Gurumurti to address us. Jai Sai Ram.
Guru Namaha. I can't really find adequate words to express my inner and deeper emotion when I am standing before all of you. It's my great fortune, for which I don't know where the grace came from. I certainly don't deserve it, to be here before all of you on this occasion and to share my thoughts on the relevance of the message of Swami in the present context. To be invited to talk in such an occasion, it has to be Swami's grace. And in my case, Swami's grace came first and I began experiencing him later. It's actually the other way around in the case of most of you. But that is how grace comes. Sri Ramakrishna says, God seems irrational in bestowing grace on the people. So I am one such person who received the grace of Swami first, and if I have occasion, I will share my first experience of Swami. We listen to Vedas and then music. You know, the power of Veda is, it is Nada Brahmam, as they say. And music and Veda are the most elevating communications which this ancient nation gave to the rest of the world. Speech is a very poor substitute. But by speaking you can influence the mind of a person. But you cannot influence the character and the inner being except through a higher communication like Vedas and music, which you have heard. But it is also a practical world which we have to deal with. And so we have to understand the world at large. What is the mission of India? Why was Swami born in India? Why were great men, an endless stream of great men through the ages, for thousands of years, why did they take birth in this ancient land? What is the message it has to give? And what is its inner being? And it is in this perspective, in the past, in the present, and what is likely to be the future, I had an occasion to have a glimpse of Swamiji, Swami's thoughts, which I thought I would share with you. The occasion is very profound and sacred. The audience is erudite and committed. And the speaker has to rise up to the occasion to match both. And I think Swami will put me on the escalator to do both. My first experience of Swami was through a total externally induced accident of someone from America calling me repeatedly for months and asking me, you must go and meet Swami for this purpose, the nation is in danger. And you have to meet him. I said, it's not that I can meet Swami or anybody can meet Swami. He must will that we must meet him. This is what I have heard. But he would not leave me. He said, there are such series of accidents in the Indian Air Force. MiG fighters were crashing almost month after month. Nearly 14 fighters had crashed and many pilots died in a period of 18 months. And he said, this has to be stopped. And he gave a very peculiar reason. He said that a country hostile to India is doing black magic on the Indian Air Force, and that is what is causing accidents. And he has done tremendous amount of research in black magic, and the only person who can stop this is Swami. You have to go and meet. You call yourself a nationalist. You are not doing it. I don't know, 3 months, 4 months, every third day, fourth day, he would call me from America. And I asked my friend, Mr. Venu Srinivasan, he was the only person who I thought could link me to Swami. And I told him, Venu, this is such a pressure on me, I don't know how to avoid him. And it is a fact that so many fighter aircrafts are crashing. Then Venu said, I don't know whether he can meet you or he will. But be prepared, 3 days you must be available. Every day morning we will go and sit. And if what your friend says is true and legitimate and he sincerely feels and you are the instrument to communicate this, Swami will certainly call you. I said, even then I am a human being. I said, Swami will call, but you must also see that Swami calls me. So we came and sat for 3 days. 3 days we decided to sit. First day Swami came and just he walked away. I was so disappointed and despondent. The next day when Swami came and he left, Venu stood up and said, Swami, my friend has come to communicate something very critical for the country. Then Swami asked us to come. We went inside. And there were many people. I was observing. I didn't know Swami. I never experienced him. I only heard him from outside. And there were stories about his miracle, his capacity to address an endless stream of great men. And these are all from a distance. And Swami was materializing many things for different people. A hefty man was there. He materialized a huge ring for him. Another, a thin man was there. He materialized a small ring for him. So in my mind I was questioning, how is it that materializing also matches the person, his body? And he called me near. And he materialized this ring and gave it to me. It fitted. Then he looked at me and asked me, does it fit you? So I knew he was reading into me. Then I went inside and told him, Swami, I have to communicate something very critical. And then Venu and me went inside and I shared with him what that friend, who I don't know, how he got my number, I don't know. He has been calling me from America. So I told Swami, this is what he sees, under tremendous pressure. He puts me under tremendous pressure and he says only Swami can save. Then Swami went into contemplation for 2-3 minutes. And then said, ask your friend to forget now that he has communicated to me. And then after a few seconds, he said, I will give him a prasad. You go and give it to him. And he materialized a diamond ring. And it was a large ring. And I don't know the person who is going to wear it, because I am only receiving his telephone calls. So I went back home. This is sometime in 2003. I don't know whether it is middle or end. And when I went home, he called me immediately. That night itself, I told him that this prasad has come. Swami has accepted. Within 72 hours, he came back. He landed in my house. You know, he was a 6-footer, hefty. The ring fitted him. I can't understand. This is completely beyond comprehension for an ordinary mind. You know, it's a dimensionless phenomenon. You cannot view it with the dimensions, even if you are multidimensional. You cannot get it. This is the first message I got. And I don't know, this link was continuing. Different people were taking me. I was not taking any effort to go to Swami. He was pulling me. And finally, somewhere I felt an opportunity came for me to repay this in a very small measure. When after Swami attained Samadhi, when the media began doing all kinds of wrong reporting, that gave me an opportunity to study Swami's work. Till then I had not studied. I had looked at him, I had experienced him partly, I had heard about him, but I never knew the tremendous amount of work that is going on and the commitment that is going into it and the efficiency and the expedition with which things were being accomplished, which is unknown in the history of voluntary organizations. Then I studied what kind of people he has attracted. I asked Mr. Srinivasan, V. Srinivasan, please give me the story of how does he attract volunteers? He said, we have 6 lakh volunteers on our roll. I asked him, can you classify these volunteers as to where do they stand, what is their standing in the society? And he said, no, we will be able to not give the entire list, but I will try and give the partial information which I have. And then I wrote an article in the Indian Express in which I summarized the kind of talent he had attracted. Thousands of doctors, thousands of lawyers, thousands of chartered accountants who would normally not leave the profession of making money. Everybody was there. Musicians, businessmen. A businessman, IAS officer, would give up his career and come and be, look after the conveniences here. A businessman running a $1 billion business will come and look after a small project. And a software engineer will kick his huge career and look after the kitchen here. What does it attract? You know, these are all huge questions on which researchers need to be done. It's not a cult. It's something far more serious. This is what made me wonder. How this phenomenon is so special to India, so natural to India. It gets repeated in this country. It is in this perspective that I thought I would share my thoughts with you. You know, we are all here to recall Swami and not to glorify Him. He doesn't need to be glorified. This is an occasion to recall Him. And He wants what? I looked at a very small book, beautifully done, as to what He wants of us. We all want to praise Him, celebrate Him, see what He wants. Swami says, you celebrate my birthday on this day. This is one of the birthday celebrations of Swami. This is only another day in the calendar. You look at it as a special day. For Him it is another day in the calendar. My birthday in you is the day when you resolve to put into practice my advice and follow my directives. That is the birthday for me. And He says, I want publicity for the teachings and the message. See the next sentence. I want the tattva prachara, not vyakti prachara. We all look at Swami, but Swami has the message to give, and He wants us to look at the message. No doubt, the message comes out of the being of Swami, the experience of Swami. He imparts that conviction, commitment, that responsibility, and elevates us to perform. But He wants us to look at the message, imbibe that message, internalize that message. And He goes on to say, not you, just encourage your sons to realize the meaning of my mission. This is the continuity. This is the tradition which has sustained this country for thousands of years. Invasions, devastations. What kind of troubles and tribulations this civilization has not undergone. But as Swami Vivekananda says, if 5,000 years back Veda Vyasa was around and He came back today, He will see some of the road maps and also the situation that prevalent at that time, the same dress, the same Vedas, the same music. That continuity is denied to all other civilizations. Swami Vivekananda said the Roman eagle floated over everything worth having in this world. Now it is a mass of ruin. Spider weaves its web where the Caesars ruled. Egyptian civilization you can find only in the broken pyramids. But here is a living civilization, you know why? That is the message Swami gives. You impart it to your son. That is the Putra Parampara. Till Vyasa it was Putra Parampara. Afterwards it became Shishya Parampara. That's how this ancient tradition has been continuously maintained despite everything, including the attack of modernity today, which has a very different meaning. This is what Swami says, that it is not to celebrate Him, but to internalize Him. And all of us have to become some kind of a light written with the jyoti that He emitted. Swami is universal. His message is an ocean. In fact, I tried to grasp as many things as possible in the last couple of days I have been reading. And reading very extensively, and I read very carefully also. And you can't really present Swami in a lifetime. It will require several lives to understand. But one life is too inadequate. You can understand one day, one speech, how difficult it is. So, what I thought, I would present a particular dimension which I can see as someone who has experienced society, culture, economics, traditions, politics, society. I thought I would grasp an amalgam of this. How Swami's basic principles work in practice. It is not that Swami said something which was in heaven. He was doing an empirical understanding of the society and presenting it in a living form. That's what I am going to share with you. because this has been the area of my study for the last 20-25 years, and so I would think that I would capture Swami in that light. You know, I looked at Swami's message, his followers. I saw a parallel between him and Shri Krishna. You know, you take what Swami did, from miracles to mukti. The miracle was the entry point. And Swami says this is the visiting card. And he even materialized a visiting card for himself. And he said, this is irrelevant. Please don't look at it. Look beyond. I have something to tell you. I will take you to the Kurukshetra war. Two warring groups assembled in millions. They have a duty to fight and win for the cause which they believe to be right. And Arjuna suddenly develops confusion. The first chapter is Arjuna's confusion, despondency, Arjuna Vishada Yoga. And he says, I won't fight. The hero is not fighting. Then Krishna begins to remove his confusion. And he calls him, you are neither a man nor a woman, are you a man? He attacks his lowest ego to provoke him. And then he teaches him karma yoga, jnana yoga, sannyasa yoga, moksha sannyasa yoga, and then he reveals himself as the Almighty, and then carries on the discourse further. And in the 63rd sloka in the 18th chapter, he says, Itite jnanam akhyadam guhya guhya dharam maya vimrshiyeta tadeshene yatechasi tatakuru. I have revealed to you the secret of secrets. I give you the freedom of action, you do whatever you want. I was addressing a Gita conference in Cochin several years back. Before an audience of very erudite people, I didn't know how to talk about Gita. So I left talking about the text of Gita. I spoke about the context of Gita and said, this is a question in my mind. Why Krishna did not give freedom of action to Arjuna in the first chapter? Why did he give him only in the 18th chapter, almost at the end? The answer that came to my mind was that a confused man does not deserve freedom. So he removed his freedom and gave him freedom of action. In the confused society, you have to attract people, and that is the miracle which Swami did. Miracle was the beginning of Swami, but many people ended with the miracles of Swami. This is how I analyzed how he produced this huge committed cadre, an unbelievable amount of work, which is not just charity. Charity can't do it. You can donate money, you can't do the work. You can't lay 2,500 kilometers of pipelines, construct 1,200 overhead tanks, 130 large reservoirs, many of them in high and low-end areas, and in 18 months provide water to 3 districts and 20 lakh people in a manner unknown. The planning commission normally does not take notice of good things done by the society, but the planning commission took notice of it and said it is an unbelievable work. You know, this cannot be done by mere charity. This cannot be done by mere donation. It requires a motivation of a very high order. You have to make man, an ordinary man, a superman to do it. And create a team. Weld people's mind together on one focused point. Yes, this is your duty, sense of duty. God came as a teacher for Arjuna. And Arjuna did not know he was God. And God came as a teacher for all of us. And all of you particularly. You have all experienced him very intensely. This is a great fortune of all of us, that God came as a teacher. There is no way you can define or describe or understand or experience God, except when you see God. And you can't see God. And so you can only see someone who is God. And as the young man who introduced Swamiji, familiarity and erudition with music said, when that Swami said that I see the he said it was the message of God, but Swami said it is God himself. You know, it requires a very, very higher understanding about everything for someone to say this. It's not a declaration. It's an admission. So now, we are all in this ancient and great land. And what is this? That this land has a continuity of such great men. And our ambition, our prayer is that he will be born again. He will be with us again. In flesh and blood. He is with us. But he will be with us in the form in which we can see, experience, hear him singing again. So how is it that it is happening only in this country? This is the question which all of us have to address. What is the mission of India? What is its vision? What is its responsibility to the world? The world looks a very, very complex and a tottering phenomenon today. As someone who studies these subjects very deeply, economics, politics, society, culture, traditions, families, gender relations, I am aghast at where the world is moving. There is no anchor. There is no particular ideology or thought system which has lived beyond 30 years in the last 150 years. Every thought which has shattered the world, reconstructed it, deformed it in the name of reformation, has not lasted beyond 30 years or 40 years. But in this country, every thought has been received and every thought has been handled. But there is something which is permanent, sustaining, going, continuing. Swami says, it is the land of sages and saints and rishis. A fortune that is denied to any other country in the world. And sometimes God comes as avatar. Krishna was never recognized as avatar in Isla, in the entire Bharata. Everyone knew, but no one would admit, nor Krishna would admit. Rama was never seen as an avatar in Ramayana. God came and wandered and played with us. In Tamil Nadu there are stories that God played with us. God got beaten up. God was with us. We played with him. We could laugh at him. We could be his friend. What is it in this land? Swami says it is the guru of all nations. You know, for him the world is one. Everyone is same for him. Every nation is same for him. But he says this nation is the guru of all nations. He cannot be untrue. He has to be true. He is Satyasai. Unless we set on an inquiry as to why does he credit this land with this great quality of being the preceptor of the world, there is something in it. The greatest and the profoundest message. I am going to link the theory to the practice now as to what Swami says on Sanatana Dharma. This is the profoundest message of India. It looks very simple. But how bereft of this message where the world is going? Once you compare this two different paradigms, and one working here and the other devastating the world, then we will understand this message and the purpose of India and the responsibility of all of us, not only to ourselves but to the entire humanity. Now I look at what Swami talks on Sanatana Dharma. It is very simple and I have taken every component of it. Sanatana Dharma includes dharma, but We must look at what is Sanatana Dharma. It looks a very, very simple formulation. Sanatana Dharma is the only religion, because for the inadequacy of English, the only word we can use is religion. Sanatana Dharma is the only religion that declares there is no religion that can be labeled as the one and only religion. This was the highest, greatest, profoundest, deepest and the truthful message that this nation gave. There is no one and only. It declares that all religions are but facets of the one truth. That all names are names of God. That all forms are but His forms. No religion can claim to represent fully the universal eternal truth. It requires such a simple formulation, but once a religion claims to represent the only truth, which means all others are false, see the devastation it causes. Just a small variation. And he talks about dharma. Sanatana Dharma rests on Samanya Dharma. Dharma is a body of principles that are fundamental to social stability and individual progress. Give me 10 minutes, I will prove every word of this from my empirical understanding of the society, nations, economy. Social stability and individual progress. Dharma means certain obligations and duties and regulations over actions, words and behavior. Next two sentences constitute the core of the truth which this ancient civilization has taught from generation to generation, which the West has denied itself and has got into ruin. That's what I'm going to tell you. Elders have certain obligations towards the youth, as young men have towards elders. Even war has to be carried on under some rules of decency and humanity. It is not only ordinary peaceful times you observe certain principles of ethics, morality, behavior, conduct. But even in war, where everything is supposed to be fair, there also dharma prevails. Is it something which utopian? Something which is out of the world? I am going to tell you a stunning historical study done by one Whiteway, who wrote on the war between the Portuguese and the Mamorin kings in the 16th and 17th century in Kerala, that what happened in Mahabharata, that both the sides will have friendly relationship, share coffee and tea together and inquire about each other, sleep by the side of each other, in the morning they will draw apart and fight with each other. This we thought is an artificial rule. Will it work? I am going to now read out to you what Whiteway says about what happened in Kerala when the Mamorin kings had a fight with Madhava Menon. Writes in the history of Kerala, taking the extracts from Whiteway's book, there were neither night fighting nor ambuscades. No war which surprises the enemy is an ethical war. No ambuscades. All fighting was in the daytime, when the sun had well risen, and the opposing camps were either pitched near each other, both sides slept securely. As the sun rise, soldiers of both the army mingled at the tank, put on their armor, ate their rice, chewed their betel, gossiped and chatted together. It is Mahabharata lived in the 17th century. At the beat of the drum, each side drew apart and formed its ranks. It was creditable to first beat the drums, to say, I am ready for war, but you won't attack unless the other side also beats the drum. This is what Swami called as even in war there is service ethics in this country. Non-combatants were never attacked. Even someone who dropped the weapon he was considered to be a non-combatant. An injured man was considered to be patient. It is in Rig Veda. It is in Mahabharata. In the war models of ancient India, V.R. Ramchandrayyar described the ethical warfare. And he calls Ashoka's Kalinga war as unethical. That was the extent. When Swami says this, see how true it was. Behaviorally, on the ground. But you must understand how we lost that ethics. Vaitavya says, this artificial system broke down very quickly under the stress of fighting against the Portuguese. He calls it artificial. We call it ethical. Thus it was always been the custom of sovereign to sound trumpet. And in 1536, he nearly surprised the Portuguese by abandoning the custom suddenly. When an inferior civilization attacks you, the superior civilization too becomes inferior. This is the message. We have got to rise above this and preserve this. And only in 1897 the world came together first in Hague and decided that non-combatants should not be attacked, women should not be attacked, children should not be attacked. War prisoners should be treated properly. 1897. And Swami says that even in war, human values are needed. He doesn't say something theory. It was practiced in this country. And now let us take the issue of what he says. That the elders should take care of the youngsters and the youngsters should take care of the elders. What does it mean? It looks so simple. But imagine it does not happen, what will happen to your society? We can look at the West. And there are demonstrable decline, not in the society, in culture, in behavior, in family, in morals, but in economics. How the economy declined. That will show how important it is that we remind ourselves of this. Now, in the West, a completely different paradigm took over. Rights. It is my right. Individual rights, elders' rights, children's rights, animals' rights, women's rights. The very contradistinction to dharma, which implied a high sense of duty and mutual obligations. The West respects the individual rights. Dharma respects the other individual's rights. Respecting other individual's rights is your duty. And that is what makes the society functional. Now, see the decline. In America and in most Western countries today, half the children are born for unwed mothers. Half of them are born for school-going children. Newt Gingrich, who was the equivalent of the Lok Sabha speaker, the Senate chairman, he said, when 12-year-olds take guns and shoot each other, when 14-year-olds become pregnant, 16-year-olds get HIV positive, and 18-year-olds get diplomas and degrees which they cannot read, what kind of civilization are we producing? This is the lament of someone where the society is deviating from the natural law of dharma. See what happens. In 1960, the ratio of family savings to total savings in America was 80%. In the third quarter of 2006, it becomes minus 20%. 30 crore Americans have 120 crore credit cards. 11 crore families have 120 crore credit cards, on which they owe $3 trillion debt. From a nation which was the banker of the world, it has become the greatest borrower of the world today. It didn't happen because of economic policies. It happened because of decline of families. And 51% of the American families are single parent families where the father and the mother do not live together or there is no father at all. In 1998, an American sociologist wrote a book that we are emerging as a fatherless nation. People do not marry. Obama has constituted in 2012 a national marriage project to persuade people to marry. They don't want to marry. this chaos is because the mutuality of obligations is forgotten. Everybody is an isolated, atomized, selfish individual. Economics says collective individual selfishness produces greater prosperity. Yes, it has produced, but it has also produced the greatest destruction. This is what Swami said, and he says very, very clearly, what is the responsibility of the relationship between parents and children? He says, respect for parents who started your life and brought you into this world to gather the vast and varied treasures and experience is the first lesson Dharma teaches. It is not just a good quality. It's not just a virtue. It's not just a value. It is not something for which you should feel happy you are doing it. It is a compulsive social, economic, political and necessity which sustains the social order. Take India. There are 80 crore Indians who are dependent on 45 crore Indians as parents, as infirm, as unemployed. There are 8 crore Indian youths who are unemployed. The family, the parents, the near and dear take care of them. It doesn't happen in America. It happens in none of the Western countries. The state has to take care of them. When the family collapses, the burden passes on to the state. When dharma collapses, society is burdened, state is burdened. So it is not simply a virtue. The failure of dharma has a devastating impact on the state. Savings collapses. See India. In 1990, we had a savings to GDP ratio of 21-22%. It went up to 37%. It shook the world. Because India is the only country which has grown so much and which has become almost the candidate for being the global power in 2030, according to the National Intelligence Council of America's report in 2012. It has become the candidate to be one of the three major world powers in 2012. What Swami would have loved, worked, prayed to happen, it is happening today. In December 2012, on the 12th of December, the National Intelligence Council of America came out with the report that there is going to be only three major world powers, superpowers, in 2030, America, China and India. Even if Indian government doesn't want it, even if the Indian political system doesn't work for it, even if the media works against it, this is going to happen. You know why? That is the destiny of India. In fact, Swami says at one point, I am really surprised, how clear he was about the role of the state. To propagate human values, it is advisable to keep as far away as possible from powers that be, which means government. It is not possible to promote sacred values through the help of government authorities. The government authorities can only do the reverse. They cannot marry people. They can pass law to separate people. They cannot keep families united, but they can pass laws to say partition suits can be filed. They cannot make husband and wife live together. They can separate them. They cannot make duties compulsory. They can make rights compulsory. This is what Swami says. A higher education is needed to internalize duty, to live duty. It's not an ordinary task. It requires extraordinary submission of the self to obey parents, to understand, to empathize. Aparigraha niraham bhavana. This is what the Kanchi Mahaswami told Jawaharlal Nehru in 1957. Aparigraha, contentment. Niraham bhavana, humility. This constitutes the foundation of Indian civilization, and this is the foundation for any civilization. Any civilization which forsakes these two qualities causes havoc. I want all of you to go through one website built by one Rammal, a Hawaii University professor, and the website is called Democide. And he has said in the last 2000 years how killings have taken place in different parts of the world. 1.4 billion people have been killed. You know the number of people killed in India? Till 13th century, it was less than 2 lakhs. Only from 13th century, 4.5 million. when outside invaders came here and rattled our society. But even then it is so less. Thousands of wars. What is it? It's an oasis of peace. Today, you go through a website which gives the relative crime rates of different countries called the nationmaster.com. It gives, and you will be stunned that in terms of robbery, in terms of murder, in terms of other types of homicide, India is the lowest crime rate nations in the world. The truth is, we have not understood India. See what Swami says. He laments. It is unfortunate that many in the sacred land are not aware of its greatness of yesterday or today or its importance tomorrow. That's what he means. Love of the mother is a sweet virtue. What a pity today love of motherland should have declined. This he spoke in 1990. And he expressed the view. Next. She was once the guru of humanity. Let us assume that role again. When India was a borrower, it was pledging its gold. Today, the National Intelligence Council of America rates India as the emerging global power. In 1990, Swami says, let us assume that role again. Do we produce youngsters of the competence, understanding, skill, confidence? It is the duty of the elders. Two generations of elders have failed this country. It is a monotonous failure. The youngsters need to understand it today. Your education is fortunately not limited to classrooms, blackboards and textbooks. The universe is on your computer. Truth comes through the computer today. You will be stunned. Everything that is suppressed by the greatest mighty liars of the world, the computer reveals today. That is what is going to make India great. Truth. Truth about India. True understanding about India. True knowledge about India. True role of India. This is what Swami wants. India has to rise in the interest of the world. I will conclude my speech with the experience of Swami Vivekananda. He traveled across the country between 1889 and 1991, where he saw hunger, poverty, illiteracy. Between 1880 and 1900, India witnessed 23 large famines. Almost 30 million people died in this 20-year period. And he goes to America and delivers a message. Here is a civilization, a culture, a religion, which will save the world from bigotry and violence. What kind of confidence that young man of 30, he was just 30. That was the first speech he delivered. He never spoke in public before that. And he lost 2.5 minutes of that 5 minutes by calling sisters and brothers of United States of America. 2.5 minutes, there was only clapping. He had only 2.5 minutes. You know how many words he spoke? Just 471 words. He turned the perception of the world. He gave them a different paradigm. And in 1897, he came back to India and said, I know everything is bleak. The country has lost its confidence. It has become celebrating the adversary. He said, but I am seeing something, a vision. And the vision is not my dream, because I am not a dreamer. I don't believe in astrology for future predictions. What I am seeing is reality. As much as I am seeing you, the audience, he said, I am seeing this vision. That Bharat Mata is sitting on the throne and ruling this world as Jagat Guru. Precisely what Swami said in 1990, and it is happening today. Let us internalize this great culture, tradition, value systems.
which not only saves us, our economy, our society, our social order. You know, we have 668,000 villages and towns. We have only 12,800 police stations. When I told this in Johns Hopkins University in America, they were stunned. Still the lowest crime-rated nations in the world because of respect for parents, respect for elders. My neighbors have corrected me. They have slapped me and corrected me. The society has a right to correct you. You have no individual right to delegitimize the society. That is dharma. We have to preserve this great heritage. It can be destroyed, but it cannot be recouped. The state can destroy, the court can destroy this. They cannot create it. This has to be created by great men who will be born time and again. They were born. That is our hope. Thank you very much.
Om Shri Sai Ram. With loving pranams and prayers at the lotus feet of our omnipresent master, dear brothers and sisters, elders, Sai devotees, I convey to you my humble, loving greetings on this most holy day for all of us. Before I say what I wanted to say, I must first say that Bhagwan always sends messengers. Bhagwan sends the right people at the right time, whether it is the hospital, whether it is the university, whether it is the organization, whether it is the water project, whether it is the Sai schools. We do nothing. Everything he does. And he makes sure that he sends the right people at the right time. And today, sir, he has sent you. Your coming is not an accident. It is his sankalpa. And may his grace always be on you to inspire and carry out your mission, which is what Swami wants his messengers to do all over, not only India, but in the world. On this holy day, not only the thousands who are here, but the millions all over the world, their thoughts are with here at this divine sannidhi. They are united by prayers, bhajans, meditation, satsang. All of them are focused on our beloved Bhagawan today. And what are their prayers? Their prayers are not of sorrow. Their prayers are for two purposes. One is the prayer of gratitude that Bhagwan bestowed on each one of them the unique privilege and good fortune to be with him for appropriate periods of time, and for all that he did, inspired, motivated, reshaped their lives. On this day, nobody can forget not to remember those days, those wonderful days when they were with the physical presence of the avatar. Then there are prayers for guidance to each one of us to play our role in the divine mission. There is no small role, there is no big role. Everything which is done for Bhagwan's mission, even an ant, has an important role to play. Every single human being, whether he is rich, poor, young, old, black, white, yellow, every one of us has our little role to play. And Bhagwan is directly in communication. He was, he is, and he will continue to be in communication with us. What is necessary from us is prayer, to have that constant communication and heart-to-heart guidance from Bhagwan. It is a prayer to put into practice all his teachings about which Sri Gurumurti spoke so eloquently. And he also very succinctly said that many people stopped with the miracles, which is also an unfortunate fact, that they did not take from Bhagwan what Bhagwan had come and is here today, even continues today, to give the real message, not the rings and the lockets and the watches, but his guidance for us to transform ourselves. And what did he want? He wanted each one of us to realize the innate divinity within each ourselves. All of us know, Bhagwan has said, when people asked him, "Are you God?" He said, "Yes, I am God. But you are also God. The difference is I know it and you do not know it." And that ignorance, maya, has prevented us from realizing our divinity. And he has come to save us. Just like Jesus came, Bhagwan has come to save us from eternal damnation. Let us not waste our lives. All his 85 years, Bhagwan gave of himself continuously without any keeping back anything, whether he was in even if great personal discomfort. Our Sai Prakash spoke how at any time, not only for his boys, but for everybody, he gave of himself. How many times we have seen, late at night, Bhagwan would come and inquire whether the devotees from Srikakulam have come. What is their arrangement made for their accommodation? Bhagwan had universal concern for the universe, continuing concern for devotees and for humanity. He gave of himself. He was Prema Swarupa and gave love, love, and love. It will be a waste of our precious lives if we forget those wonderful actions and demonstrations of Bhagavan, they were all examples. He didn't want to do these things to show off. He didn't set up all these hospitals and all for publicity. He said that these are all which can be replicated. People working together can achieve anything. You don't have to look to the government always to do this and to do that. We should never be guilty of the worst sin. And Bhagavan always said that the worst sin is the sin of ingratitude. How ungrateful we would be, brothers and sisters, if we do not fulfill all that Bhagavan has guided us to do. Swami spoke to each one of us. His relationship was individual, direct, heart to heart. There was no need for any intermediary between Bhagavan and ourselves. He actively said, you and me, we have a relationship which is anantam. It was, it is, and it will be. So today, one message which we have to keep in mind, brothers and sisters. So many people now start to say, oh, Bhagavan has told me to tell you this. Beware of these false prophets. You do not need anybody to communicate to Bhagavan. You do not need anybody for you to receive his communications. Bhagavan has says there is nobody who is my successor. Don't think that the trustees are his successors. No, they are not. They are just in a particular position which he has placed for a limited time, and then we will pass. But he will continue. He is forever. He is eternal. And he will act with each one of us directly. Don't think that you need somebody now to act as a medium or a conduit to receive Bhagavan's communications. Today, for all of us, if I may share with you what I have learned, is that there is no difference between Bhagavan and Bhagavan's work. If you do Bhagavan's work in whatever fashion, you may be sweeping the floor, you may be cleaning the vessels, you may be working in the hospital as a physiotherapist, you may be a lecturer or a pune in the university. If you do Swami's work, you are worshipping Bhagavan. That is the real aradhana. That is the continuing mahotsavam. That you continue to worship Bhagavan every day, not on the 24th of April only. And that is what we should realize. What did Bhagavan want from us? Just as you have humbled us, sir, by reading this book which I gave you barely a week back. Bhagavan did not want anything from us. Bangaru, I want only your love in the form of Hridaya Pushpa. Not just all these flowers, not the temples, but the Hridaya Pushpa of love. And that is what we should give to Bhagavan. Bhagavan has left permanent institutions, have no doubt about them. They will continue when we are not here. They are forever and ever. They are for the world. They are for the universe. Whether the central trust trustees continue or not, the central trust will continue. That is Bhagavan's trust. We are here. We have, as he always used to tell us, we are all actors. There is a certain period on which we have to play our roles. And we should be conscious of that. that we are only actors. We have a responsibility. We have a duty. And this is what we are to do. And that today, the trustees of the Central Trust, on whose behalf I'm speaking, would like to again pray to Bhagwan to guide us and make us conscious of our responsibility, not our rights. As he said, in this society we have become so conscious of rights, of our duties. And it is he who does. Who are we to do? And today, it is my privilege to announce that in the second phase of the Anantapur Rural Drinking Water Scheme, water supply has started in 50 villages out of the 118 which are covered by this project. It is Bhagwan Sankalpa. We are fortunate, all of us, that we had a chance to experience it. And today, by his grace, the poor and the needy in these villages will receive in this hot sun the pure drinking water. Many things have happened in the last year. Bhagwan was always very particular that his hospitals should have the latest equipment, state of the art. And these last 2 years, the hospitals have been allocated over 40 crores of rupees for modernization of the facilities. They have a new cath lab, MRI, and all kinds, new CTs, and all kinds of facilities are there, so that Bhagwan's hospitals, as they were, offer the best medical care to the poor and needy, and that will continue by Bhagwan's grace. You all are watching as you come in that the general hospital, which was the first hospital, is now being expanded. Do you know, brothers and sisters, that this hospital treats over 32,000 patients a month? And that is why this becomes the first center which is the point of interaction with those who are sick and those who need care. So this hospital is now being expanded. The buildings are now in the process of being constructed. And we hope that they'll be ready soon. In the university, the Center for Advanced Studies, which will enable our PhD scholars and our postdoctoral scholars to continue their research work here itself, is now under construction. We have also a new hostel coming up at the Muddanahalli campus. There have been new buildings commissioned at Anantapur. There's a new archives building which will preserve for posterity with the latest facilities, climate control rooms, all the rare memorabilia and the tapes and the films and the audiovisual media right from the time that Swami started his mission, so that the future generations, those who have not had the benefit of having the physical darshan of Bhagwan, will experience his continuing presence. Water recycling plants to be able to economize the quantity of water which we use in the ashram, in the hospitals, are all, some of them have been commissioned, and now there are others under construction. A new mobile hospital, just like what Bhagwan gave for the villages surrounding Puttaparthi, is being launched in Chennai by the Central Trust, which will serve over 2 lakhs of people in that area. The Rajamundri School, which Bhagwan had great affection for, is being modernized and facilities are being improved. The 100 Sai schools are all getting assistance now from the Central Trust all over India. 55,000 students are in these schools and they are being assisted to improve. Next year, dear brothers and sisters, is the year of the 90th birthday of Bhagwan. It is going to be a glorious year. There will be many, many activities, many programs at Prashanti Nilayam, and all of us have our role to play in these celebrations of Bhagwan. The Sai organization, Sati Sai Seva organization, is launching 3 main initiatives apart from other activities, which is diverse activities which have expanded so much in the last 10 years by Bhagwan's grace. The 3 national initiatives will be in connection with our SSS VIP villages. One will be on improvement of national nutrition. Today we know that more than 40% of the children in India are malnourished. So we are now wanting to do something in the SSS VIP villages to look after pregnant mothers and young children by giving them nutritional supplements and carefully monitoring their progress and their improvement of health. The second one is where the organization is now setting up disaster management training centers. When there are tsunamis, whether there are floods, whether there are cyclones, fires, earthquakes, the Sati Sai organization, Sevadal, today, many of them have specialized training. And we are now wanting to train the villagers so that they will respond immediately to any disasters which occur in their areas. So there will be central training centers set up in many states, and all these SSS VIP villages will have a disaster management center fully staffed with the response team to go swing into action whenever there is any problems which occur. And the third one is the rural vocational training centers. See, Gurumurthy mentioned there are 7 crores of youth who are unemployed. And what is happening? Most of the young people from the villages are leaving the villages, going to the cities, and further aggravating the problems there. We want to encourage these youth by imparting to them skills so that they will remain in the villages and give service to the village which it needs. We'll train them as plumbers, electricians, carpenters, tractor mechanics, cell phone repairs, masons. And not only that, the organization proposes to assist them in small groups to set up their own businesses so that they will be able to function and earn their livelihood in the village. Today in so many villages when we go, we see only old men, women and children. The youth have all gone because there's no livelihood. That we will, with Bhagwan's guidance and blessings, contribute our little part to reverse that situation. Central Trust, as you know, since last 3 years, has been bringing out an annual report. Very few public charitable trusts in India bring out annual reports. We felt that Bhagwan would have liked us to be transparent so that nobody can suspect there is some secret. There is no secret. So all details of the finances of the trust, Its activities are being published in these annual reports. And this year also, on the 23rd of November, the annual report of the trust will come out. As we said, it is the trustees or any individuals. None of us are important. Bhagwan is the only one who is important. Bhagwan's institutions are important. And it is our duty to introduce proper systems and governance so that, you know, we become systems dependent rather than individual dependent. The Aradhana Mahotsavam is a day of rededication. Rededication to Bhagavan, rededication to Sanatana Dharma, rededication to that universal self, rededication to our Bharat Mata. It is a day to rejoice that it is our good fortune to have been with Sai, to be with Sai, and to be with Sai in the future, in many lives, by His grace and Sankalpa. Jai Sai Ram.
We now pray to Bhagwan to bless all of us with His divine message. Sai Ram.
Embodiments of law.
మన సుఖ దుఃఖములు రెండు కూడాను మనం కల్పించుకున్నవే కానీ భగవంతుడు ప్రసాదించినవి కాదు.
Pain and pleasure are of our own making, nothing to do with the divine.
ఇది రెండింటిని మనమే కల్పించుకొని రెండింటి ద్వారా మనమే బాధపడుతున్నాము.
The pain and pleasure are of our own making, and we experience both.
ఎవరు మనకు బాధను అందించేటువంటి వారిని జగత్తులో కనరాదు.
In this world there are none to give you any pain.
ఈ బాధను కల్పించేటువంటి వారు కూడా ఎక్కడ కనరాదు.
There are none who are put to such kind of suffering.
ఈ రెండు కూడాను నీవే కల్పించుకుంటున్నావు.
Both of them are of your own making.
ఇది రెండు కూడాను నీకు బ్రహ్మనే.
That's your imagination.
ఆ బ్రహ్మ తన యందు ఉండినంత వరకు సత్యమైనటువంటి బ్రహ్మ మనకు తెలియదు.
So long this illusion is there, you cannot know the truth.
కనుక ఈ భ్రమను మనం వదులుకోవాలి.
So we must shed this imagination.
సుఖ దుఃఖములు రెండు కూడా భ్రమలే కాని మరొకటి కావు.
The pain and pleasure are equally fleeting, imaginary.
బిడ్డ తల్లి అనేటువంటిది కూడాను ఒక భ్రమలే కాని నిజంగా బిడ్డ తల్లిలు కాదు.
The child and mother are also imaginations, but not true.
ప్రతి ఒక్కటి కూడాను భగవత్ విషయంలో ప్రవేశించినప్పుడు అన్ని కూడా భ్రాంతులే.
In respect of the divinity, when it's a matter of God, all our thoughts,
తెల్లవారు పదులుకొని రాత్రి పరుగునేంత వరకు కూడా మనకి బ్రహ్మలే వరకు జీవితాన్ని కల్పిస్తున్నాయి.
Right from the time we get up from bed until we retire, we are full of these thoughts and imaginations.
జన్మించినటువంటి మానవుడు ఎంతవరకు తాను సత్యంగా ఉండగలరు?
Man was taken, but how long is he going to live his life?
పెరుగుతూ పోతుంది, తర్వాత కృంగుతూ వస్తుంది.
To all he grows more and more, but naturally one day the body should to
fall. పుట్టడము పెరగటము ఇవన్నీ కూడాను అసత్యములే.
The birth and growth are also untrue.
కానీ ఇది మనం సత్యంగా భావించుకుని దీనితో మనం అనేక బాధలు పడుతున్నాం.
We consider them as reality, and hence we suffer.
కనుక మనం ఏది చేసినప్పటికీ ఈ ఒక్కటి కూడా సత్యం కాదు.
Therefore whatever you may do, never consider any as truth.
నీ కన్ను తెరిచి చూసినప్పటికీ ఇన్ని శిరస్సులు కనిపిస్తున్నాయి.
When you open your eyes, you see so many heads here.
కానీ కన్నును మూసుకుంటేవా ఒక్క శిరస్సు అయినా కనిపించదు.
The moment you close your eyes, you don't see even one head.
ఆ చిత్రములంతా ఎక్కడ పోయినాయి?
What happened to all the heads?
ఆ చిత్రం ఎక్కడి నుంచి వచ్చాయి?
Where from have they come?
కాబట్టి ఎక్కడి నుంచి వచ్చాయో అక్కడికే పోయినాయి.
They return to the place of their origin.
ఎక్కడి నుంచి వచ్చిందో నీకు తెలియదు.
You don't know where from.
ఎక్కడ పోయిందో నీకు తెలియదు.
You also do not know where they left.
కనుక తెలియనటువంటి దాన్ని పట్టుకొని మనం బాధపడుతున్నాము.
We suffer in order to know which is unknown.
ఈ తెలియని దానికోసం బాధపడటం ఇది ఎంత పిచ్చితనము.
It's total madness to worry for that which is not known.
ఇది ఏది నేను కాదు నావి కాదు అనేటువంటి సత్యాన్ని గుర్తించుకున్నప్పుడు నీకు ఎట్టి బాధ కూడా ఉండదు.
If you know the reality that none belong to you, that you are none of these, then you never suffer.
కనుక అన్నిటి కూడా మనం భ్రమలతో కల్పించుకున్నామే కానీ సత్యమైనటువంటిది ఒక్కటి కూడా లేదు.
Therefore everything is illusion of our own making, nothing is total truth.
ప్రేమ స్వరూపులారా,
embodiments of love,
ఈ ప్రేమ అనేటువంటిది ఒక్కటే మాత్రము మన వెంట అదంతా ఇంటా ఉంటుండాలి.
It is only the love that is with you, in you, above you, below you, around you.
ఈ ప్రేమ అనేటువంటిది లేకపోతే మానవుడే లేడు.
Without love man cannot live.
కనుకనే ప్రేమ అనేటువంటిది నిజమైన ప్రాణం.
Therefore love is life.
ఆ ప్రేమనే మనకు లైట్.
This love is light.
Love is light.
Love is light.
ఆ లైట్ ను మనం పెట్టుకుంటే ఈ అజ్ఞానం అనే చీకటి మనకు గోచరం కాదు.
When we have this light of love, the darkness, ignorance would be dispelled.
దీనిని పురస్కరించుకుని పునరపి జననం పునరపి మరణం.
Basing on this, it's only said repeated life cycle
of birth and death.
So what that you see, you do not see later.
కనిపించకుండా ఏది పోయినదో అది తిరిగి వచ్చి కనిపిస్తూనే ఉండాలి.
The non-apparent becomes apparent or comes because something.
రెండు కూడాను ఆ వస్తువు యొక్క పరిణామం కాదు.
Nothing to do with the changes in the material.
వస్తువుల యొక్క దీనిపైన ఉన్నటువంటి మానవుని యొక్క ప్రభావమే.
It is only human relations with the material objects that would make him feel so.
మానవుడు ఇట్టి ప్రభావానికి గురి అయిపోయి ప్రమాదం కల్పించుకుంటున్నాడు.
Man is subjected to effects of such imaginations relating to the objective world, and so he suffers.
ప్రేమ స్వరూపులారా,
embodiments of love.
ప్రేమ ఎప్పటికీ చావనటువంటిది.
Love is immortal, deathless.
అది ఎప్పటికీ చావనటువంటి ప్రేమనే మనకు నిజమైనటువంటి ప్రేమ.
That immortal love is true love.
వచ్చి పోయేటువంటి ప్రేమ ప్రేమనే కాదు.
దట్ విచ్ కమ్స్ అండ్ గోస్ ఇస్ నాట్ ట్రూ లవ్.
ఈ దేహం పెరుగుతుండాలి, ఈ దేహం తరుగుతూ ఉండాలి.
ద బాడీ గ్రోస్ అండ్ ఆల్సో డికేస్.
ఈ పెరిగి తరిగేటువంటి యొక్క దేహం యొక్క తత్వం నువ్వు సత్యమని భావిస్తున్నావు.
హౌ డు యూ కన్సిడర్ దిస్ ట్రూ వేర్ దిస్ బర్త్ గ్రోత్ అండ్ డెత్
కాదు. ఈ సర్వభ్రాంతులకు ఈ దేహమే మూల కారణం.
ఫర్ ఆల్ దిస్ ఇమాజినేషన్స్ ద బాడీ ఇస్ ద మెయిన్ కాజ్.
కనుక ఈ బాడీ అభిమానమును క్రమక్రమేణా తగ్గించుకోండి.
Therefore, you have to reduce this body attachment day by day.
ఈ తగ్గించుకోవటమే చాలా ప్రధానమైన యొక్క తత్వం.
దిస్ ఇస్ మోస్ట్ ఎసెన్షియల్.
ఇది నీ యొక్క తెలియని సాధనం.
దిస్ ఇస్ ది ట్రూ స్పిరిచువల్ ప్రాక్టీస్.
సాధనగా జపము తపము యోగము ధ్యానము ఇవి చేసి కాదు వచ్చేది.
ద స్పిరిచువల్ ప్రాక్టీస్ డస్ నాట్ మీన్ వర్షిప్, మెడిటేషన్, పెనెన్స్ అండ్ సో ఆన్.
నేను దేని భావిస్తున్నానో, ఏం సత్యం అనుకుంటున్నానో ఆ సత్యాన్ని నువ్వు వదలాలి.
దట్ వాట్ యు కన్సిడర్ ట్రూ, ఇట్ మస్ట్ బి గివెన్ అప్.
అది వదలటం చాలా సులభమైనటువంటిది.
ఇట్స్ క్వైట్ ఈజీ టు గివ్ అప్ దిస్ ఫాల్స్ ఐడెంటిటీ.
కానీ ఎందుకు ఇంత బాధపడుతున్నావో నాకు అర్థం కావటం లేదు.
But you do not know why you are suffering.
ఉండినంత వరకు మనం ఆనందాన్ని అనుభవిస్తున్నాం.
We experience bliss so long we are in this body.
కానీ ఆ దేహం నుంచి శ్వాస పోతే మనం ఏ మాత్రము యోచించుకోకుండా బాధపడుతున్నాం.
The moment it is gone, we suffer, we grieve.
కనుకని ఈ జనన మరణములకు మన భ్రాంతులే మూల కారణం.
So for birth and death, it's only our thought.
ఈ భ్రాంతిని మనం వదులుకోవడానికి ప్రయత్నించాలి.
We should make every effort to give up such thoughts.
దేహాభిమానములను కొంచెం వరకు తగ్గించుకోవాలి.
వీ హావ్ టు కట్ షార్ట్ అవర్ బాడీ ఐడెంటిఫికేషన్.
తగ్గించుకుంటూ రావడం చేతనే ఈ అభిమానం పూర్తి నశించుతుంది.
యాజ్ యూ మేక్ ఎవ్రీ అటెంప్ట్ టు రిడ్యూస్ ఇట్ డే బై డే, ఇట్ ఈస్ క్వైట్ పాసిబుల్.
అది ఈ నిజమైన సాధన.
దట్ ఈస్ ది ట్రూ స్పిరిచువల్ ప్రాక్టీస్.
ఈ సాధన అంటే ఏమిటి?
వాట్ ఈస్ స్పిరిచువల్ ప్రాక్టీస్?
ఉన్నదాన్ని పోగొట్టుకోవటం సాధన అనుకుంటున్నారా?
Do you mean to say that spiritual practice is the one to lose what
you have?
No.
పోయేదాన్ని నాదనుకుంటున్నావా? అది కాదు.
Do you have a claim on that which is lost? No.
ఉన్నది కానీ పోయేది కానీ రెండు కూడా నీది కాదు.
That which exists, that which is non-existent, do not belong to you either.
కలలో కనిపించినటువంటి స్వప్నములే,
they are like dreams.
ఆ భ్రాంతులు నిన్ను తప్పింపు చేస్తుండాలి.
అండ్ ఇట్స్ ఓన్లీ డ్రీమ్ ఎక్స్పీరియన్సెస్ దట్ వుడ్ కన్ఫ్యూజ్.
అన్నింటికీ మూల కారణం ఒక్కటే.
ఫర్ ఆల్ దిస్ దేర్ ఇస్ ఓన్లీ వన్ మెయిన్ కాజ్.
చూడండి ఇప్పుడే వచ్చినాయి ఎన్ని బల్బులు కనిపిస్తున్నాయి.
యు ఫైండ్ సో మెనీ బల్బ్స్ ఇల్యూమినింగ్.
ఇవి ఎంచుకోవడానికి పోతే చాలా ఉన్నాయి.
యూ కెన్ కౌంట్, దేర్ ఆర్ మెనీ.
ఇన్ని నంబర్స్ అయినటువంటి బల్బులు అన్నిటి ఎందుకు ఒక్కటే ఉన్నది ప్రధానం.
There's only one current that flows in all these bulbs.
ఆ కరెంట్ ఒక్కటే మాత్రమే సత్యమైనటువంటిది.
దట్ current is the principle of truth.
ఈ రావటము పోవటం అంతా కూడాను మన భ్రాంతి యొక్క భ్రమనే.
Therefore the power supply and absence is only your thought.
కనుక ప్రేమ స్వరూపులారా
ఎంబోడ్మెంట్
ప్రేమను మాత్రం అభివృద్ధి చేసుకోండి.
డెవలప్ లవ్ మోర్ అండ్ మోర్.
ఎవరు చూసినా ప్రేమించండి.
లవ్ ఎవ్రీవన్.
నీ యొక్క ఎదురున్నటువంటి వాడు నీకు ద్వేషి కాదు.
దేర్ ఇస్ నో పర్సన్ హూ హేట్స్ యూ.
నీకెవరు కూడా విరోధం కాదు.
నన్ ఆర్ ఎనిమీస్.
నీకందరూ ప్రేమించుకోవలసిన వాడే.
దేర్ఫోర్ ఆల్ డిజర్వ్ యువర్ లవ్.
కనుక నువ్వు ద్వేషించినటువంటి వాడు నావాడు కాదు అనుకుంటున్నావు.
You consider a person who hates you as your enemy.
ప్రేమించిన వాడే నా వాడు అనుకుంటున్నావు.
You think that the person who loves you as your own.
రెండు కూడా నీది కానే కాదు.
In fact, both of them don't belong.
విచ్చిపోయినటువంటి భ్రాంతులే నీ యొక్క భ్రమలు.
It is only the thoughts and the mind that brought the distinction.
ఈనాడు భగవంతుని యొక్క తత్వాన్ని గుర్తించుకోవాలంటే ఎన్నో సాధనలు చేస్తున్నారు.
Today, to know the divinity, people follow many spiritual disciplines. What are they? Is it possible to experience him? Do you mean to say that he would leave if you don't pursue? It is only the thoughts, imaginations that appear and vanish. We should make every effort to be free from the thought process.
నేను అనేటువంటి భ్రాంతిని నువ్వు వదులుకో.
Give up this body identification mind.
అప్పుడే నీకు ఈ భ్రాంతి పోతుంది.
Then you will be free from the delusion.
అప్పుడే నీకు ఎట్టి భ్రాంతి కూడా ఉండదు. నీకు భయభ్రాంతులు కూడా ఉండవు.
Then you will never be affected by any sense of fear or delusion.
కనుక మనం ఈనాడు మన సాధన చేయవలసింది ఏమిటి?
What is that we should do?
ధ్యానంలో కూర్చోవటము, జపములు చేయటము, సాధనలు జరపటము ఇవి అనుకుంటున్నాం మనం. ఈ సాధనలు జపములు తపములు మన భ్రాంతి కోసమే చేస్తున్నాం కానీ నిజమైన బ్రహ్మం కోసం కాదు.
యు థింక్ ఇన్ ద నేమ్ ఆఫ్ ద స్పిరిచువల్ డిసిప్లిన్ యూ సిట్ టు మెడిటేట్ యూ వర్షిప్ యూ వాంట్ టు డూ పెనెన్స్ బట్ దట్స్ ఆల్ యువర్ ఓన్ థాట్ యువర్ ఓన్ మైండ్.
ఇవన్నీ కూడా నువ్వు వదిలిపెట్టు.
గివ్ అప్ ఆల్ దీస్.
నేనే దైవము, నేనే దైవము, నేనే దైవము.
Strengthen the thought that I am God, I am God.
I am God, I am God, I am God and touch go. Nive God aipothav.
Think repeatedly, I am God, I am God.
This body only the vastram.
This body is only the vesture, the dress.
Nivu dharinchinatundi yokka vastrame gaani idi puttinatundi vastram kaadu.
Body is the dress you have put on. The dress has not taken any birth.
Ee dehabhrantini penchukoni 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 dukham marinta perigipothundadi.
The suffering is more and more because of this body identification.
Prema sarupulara.
Embodiments of love.
Mukhyanga meeru vetakavalsindi nee endunnatundi ninne vetakali.
In fact, you have to search yourself within.
Innu nee vetukodame idi nijame sakshatkaram.
The self inquiry is the true manifestation.
Adi telusukunte inke ayya badhalu undavu neeku.
The moment you know, you will not suffer any longer.
కనుక మీరు ఏమాత్రం కూడా బాధపడుకోకుండా దైవ సాక్షాత్కారం కాలేదని మీరు వచించకండి.
నెవర్ ఫీల్ సాడ్, నెవర్ సే దట్ యు హావ్ నాట్ ఎక్స్పీరియన్స్డ్ ద మానిఫెస్టేషన్ ఆఫ్ గాడ్.
కనుక తన తానేందే ఉన్నాడు.
గాడ్ ఈజ్ ఇన్ యూ.
ఒకడు పుస్తకం చదువుతున్నాడు.
వన్ వాస్ ఫౌండ్.
ఆ చదువుతూ ఉన్నప్పుడు 10 రూపాయల నోట్ ఆ పుస్తకంలో పెట్టాడు.
అండ్ హీ కెప్ట్ ఎ 10 రూపీ కరెన్సీ నోట్ ఇన్ ద బుక్.
కానీ మర్చిపోయినాడు.
హి హస్ ఫర్గాటన్.
మరి ఒకనాడు అందరినీ నువ్వు 10 రూపీస్ ఇస్తావా అని అడిగాడు.
హావింగ్ ఫర్గాటన్ ద లాస్ట్ నోట్ అండ్ హి హస్ బీన్
థింకింగ్ మై ఫ్రెండ్
10 రూపీస్ నోట్ ఫ్రమ్ సంబడి
ఇస్తాను కూర్చోమని చెప్పాడు.
సమ్ పర్సన్ సెడ్ yes I'll give you
ఏంటి బుక్ అని దాన్ని తీసుకుని చదువుతూ వచ్చాడు.
అండ్ హీ వాస్ గోయింగ్ త్రూ ద బుక్ placed in front of him.
ఆ బుక్ లోపలే 10 రూపీస్ నోట్ కనిపించింది.
దేర్ హీ కుడ్ నోటీస్ ద 10 రూపీ నోట్.
అప్పుడు అయ్యా నా బుక్ లో నేనే ఎప్పుడు పెట్టాను కానీ మర్చిపోయాను, నిన్ను నేను 10 రూపీస్ అడిగాను.
Then the man replied, I kept 10 rupee note in this book long back. I have forgotten. And therefore I wanted 10 rupee note from you.
10 rupees naaku akkarledu.
Well, I don't need your 10 rupee note.
Nenu pettina 10 rupees naaku chikkindi.
I have got this 10 rupee note with me now, which I kept it in the book.
Appudu neeku ye vidhamaina runamu undadu.
Then I am not indebted to you in any way.
నీవు దానిని మరచి మిత్రం దగ్గర 10 రూపాయల నోట్ తీసుకుంటే నీవు ఎప్పటికైనా వాడికి రుణపడి ఉంటావు.
If you forget the 10 rupee of your own and seek from someone else, you are indebted to him.
కనుక ప్రతి తత్వమును కూడా తనయందే వెతకాలి కానీ బయట ఏమాత్రం వెతకనక్కర్లేదు.
Therefore every principle must be sought after in the interior, not outside.
కనుక ఇలాంటి సత్యమైనటువంటి దీన్ని ఒక చిన్న మార్గంలోనే మనం గుర్తించవచ్చు.
This truth can be known in a very simple way.
ప్రేమ స్వరూపులైన విద్యార్థులారా,
ఎంబాడిమెంట్స్ ఆఫ్ లవ్ స్టూడెంట్స్,
ఈ విద్యార్థులు కూడా ఎన్నో రకమైనటువంటి భ్రాంతులతో చాలా ప్రయత్నాలు చేస్తున్నారు.
స్టూడెంట్స్ ఆల్సో మేక్ సో మెనీ ఎఫర్ట్స్ బికాస్ ఆఫ్ దర్ ఇమాజినేషన్.
మీరు ఏ వస్తువులు మీరు తెలుస్తున్నా బయట మాత్రం వెతకండి.
నెవర్ సర్చ్ ఫర్ ఎనీథింగ్ అవుట్ సైడ్.
మీ అందే ఉంటున్నది.
The reality is within you.
మీ సర్వస్వము మీ అందే ఉంటున్నది.
Everything is within you.
బయట వెతికేదంతా కూడా కల్పన ఉంది.
All that you are in search outside is imaginary.
ఆ ఇమాజినరీ మీరు తట్టుకోండి.
Face that imagination, resist that.
అప్పుడే మీకు శాంతి కలుగుతుంది.
Then you will be peaceful.
అప్పుడే నీకు సర్వైనటువంటి విషయం నేను నేనే నేను నేనే.
Then you will know the truth behind this dictum, I am I.
కనుకనే మీరు ఈ చిన్న విషయాన్ని తెలుసుకోవడానికి చాలా గ్రంథాలు చాలా ఫలితాలు జరుపుతూ ఉంటున్నారు.
To know these simple truths, you go through so many sacred texts.
కనుక ఈ టెక్స్ట్ అంతా కూడా పారవేయండి.
Brush aside all these texts.
నీ టేస్ట్ ని మాత్రం నీవు చక్క పట్టుకో.
Go by the taste of your life, not the text.
నీ టేస్ట్ నిన్ను చూడాలని నీవే.
The taste is the taste of the self.
కనుక నిన్ను నీవు చూసుకుంటే నీకు ఏ విధమైన టేస్ట్ ఉండదు.
If you have got the taste of the reality yourself, you will not have taste after anything.
Kaluka prema sarupala
embodiments of love.
Bhaje Govindam, bhaje Govindam. Bhaje Govindam, bhaje Govindam. Bhaje Govindam. సంస్కారే బహు దుస్తారే కృపయా పారే పాయి మురారే భజ గోవిందం భజ గోవిందం భజ గోవిందం గోవిందం భజ మూఢమతే
పరిపురీశ్వర బాబా బ్రహ్మాండ నాయక బాబా పరిపురీశ్వర బాబా
and
तुमने बनाए नदियां सागर तुमने बनाए नदियां सागर तुमने बनाए ब्रह्मांड नायका बाबा अयोध्या नगरी तुमने बनाई द्वारका नगरी तुमने बसाई तुमने बनाए शिरडी परदी तुमने बनाए ब्रह्मांड नायका बाबा प्रतिपुरी
Yeah, Narayana, 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 Naray Jai Bharat.